From one islander to another, Isle of Wight Radio proudly presents John Hannam Meets.
Hi, and welcome to another John Hannam Meets archive. Today, our story begins back in 1989. On the Isle of Wight, there was a theatrical agent called Sylvia Thorley, who brought lots and lots of mainland artists to work the Isle of Wight during the summer season. And to thank them all, at the end of the season, she always gave them a party at the Lincoln Hotel on Shanklin Seafront. She phoned me one day and said, John, you're very much welcome at my party and you might be interested to know Benny Hill's coming. Well, I didn't really think this would happen, but just in case, I put my cassette tape recorder into the boot of my car and thought, well, you never know. I got to the party and there was Benny Hill sat on a table with seven or eight lovely looking young ladies, including one or two Hill's Angels who'd actually come from the Isle of Wight. And I thought, shall I risk it? He was very, very friendly and said, I'll do an interview, but they must stay here with me while I'm talking to you. So I interviewed him surrounded by young ladies. And of course, it was quite noisy because it was a party. So we're going back to the summer of 1989 at the Lincoln Hotel Shanklin when I met the one and only Benny Hill, who, of course, at that time was not giving many interviews at all.
Another Hannam Archive.
Going back to the early days, you were in Variety at Southampton. You used to go and watch Variety. That sort of you interested in the business, didn't it?
Yes, yes. I used to go with my grandfather, either to the Palace or the Hippodrome. Hippodrome was usually Variety, and the Palace was a review. And in the review, there was always 6, 8, 10, 12 girls that were called the Beauty Gals or the Naughty Gals or Sex and Steps Appeal, and there was always a principal comedian who was billed above the title as the new star comic. He wasn't, no one had ever heard of him before, but he was a good working, solid, always called the principal comedian. And there would be a straight man who did sang baritone. There would be one of the girls who had a bit of talent would get billed as the soubrette because she came and did little bits and pieces. And I used to sit in the theatre and I used to think, because all the old women had roared with laughter at the comedian and said, wouldn't he a devil? And they used to love him. They were big fat ladies with corsets on, would rock with laughter. When every time he did something, they laughed. And when he finished, they all clapped him at the end. And I thought, that's not a bad life, because he's probably getting more money than anybody else. He's surrounded by girls who all sort of in an opening number, making a fuss of him. And I thought, that's not a bad life. And that's really roughly where I aim for. And I suppose you could say the show I have now is almost the television equivalent of that. The sketches are for people, not for six of my friends. As some comedians, of course, they're working so that half a dozen of their friends say, oh, wasn't that brilliant? Some choreographers do that, don't they?
Yes, they do.
They choreograph for choreographers, not for the audience. And I've always thought, you know, that either the more people who watch my show, the happier I am. I don't want half a dozen intellectuals, you know, to watch it. I want a few million people.
Did you ever want to be a stand-up comic? I mean, you've worked away from that, but you were a straight man for Reg Varney at one time.
That's right. And of course, when you start, you have to be you don't have a writer. I don't have a writer now. But I mean, you don't have a writer when you start. You do what you think you can. You get on amateur talent shows and working men's clubs, and you play anywhere you can get up and do a little bit. So, of course, you always start solo. And I was on the radio for quite a while, doing Variety Bandbox, Variety Fanfare, Workers' Playtime, those sorts of things.
Did you ever sort of despair and think you weren't going to make the top?
I did. More than once, of course. But I remember once when things weren't going as nice as I thought they might, and I was in London, and I was going to go to my parents' house, you know, that I've got now in Southampton, and say, well, I've had a go and it's not working, so I'll get a job and play semi-pro trumpet in a dance band or something. And I couldn't get I thought I won't come on the train because the buses were cheaper then, you know, the Victoria coach station. And they said the next one's not till, I don't know, 5, 6 o'clock or something. And I thought, oh, I'll hang around. And I went to a little cinema called the Bijou Cinema in Victoria, and there was a Danny Kaye film on there. It wasn't Wonder Man, I think it was his second film, where he played twins and one died and haunted the other one. And at the end of it, I thought, it was, I suppose, inspiring, although maybe I was saying, if he could do it, so can I. And I didn't go to Southampton, and I thought, I'll give it another go. Played a few more working men's clubs, and then somebody saw me and booked me a Masonic dinner, and then you get a cricket club, and then you go into the cricket club, Rotary Club, and not the working men's club, so that the difference between £1 a show and £2.50 or £3 a show, and £3 a show then. And then I played Camberwell Palace, and I did a 4-minute broadcast on the radio live from there. And the next day I went to see Eric Speer, who was the producer, who was a lovely man. And he's the man who wrote the signature music for Coronation Street, Eric Speer. He was such a nice man. I went to see him and said, is it all right to come and talk to you? Because, you know, how did I do last night? Was I, if I was bad or did something wrong, tell me. He said, no, you were fine. He said, you're very keen, aren't you? I said, yeah. He said, hang on. And he got on the phone to a lady on the floor above called Joy Russell Smith, who was doing Variety Bandbox. And he said, I've got a lad here who's very keen. Will you see him? And she said, yes, send him up. So I went up there and she said, what do you do? And of course, I went straight into a routine. And she said, fine, well, have you, let me think, 3 Sundays from now, the fee is 10 guineas. And I said, oh, thank you. which you did then. And that's how these things, you know, happen. Nobody ever gets away overnight. They may tell you they do, but they don't. It's sort of, it took me a lifetime to be discovered overnight, you know what I mean?
You're one of the few British comics who've really made it big all over the world. I mean, this must be a great thrill for you, mustn't it?
Oh, yes, yes, it's very nice, yes. Yeah, I don't mind. You know, I was in Madrid a couple of weeks ago, but everywhere you go, you're known. So you can't say, I'll go to Paris and have a naughty time, because not that I would, of course, but had I been so inclined, and of course, one's approached more. I mean, I could walk around. I walked up and down the promenade for about 20 minutes earlier on today. And 3 people said, oh, can I have a picture taken with you? She's gone to get the camera, you know. She's gone to get it. But they don't bother you. I walk around Southampton, I walk around London or Teddington. Nobody bothers you. It's usually when you're in another country that they say, I can't believe it, you know, that you're here, you know.
You've had a lot of unfair criticism, I think, Benny, over the years. Does it affect you, or do you wave it aside?
I don't know. You've got to look at the criticism. Well, what I always do, I sort of read the rest of the piece, if it's a press criticism, and think, he can't string more than 3 words together without falling over, you know. I could tell you some funny things. We have a laugh about it. Generally speaking, the national press, it's the provincial press, I find, which is very strange. There's a newspaper that's always having a go at me in Ipswich. Last time he really had a go was over an expression I used in the show, saying, not a soul, not a single soul. And he actually said, words to the effect, because I can remember it, because we all had a good laugh about it. I said, since then, not a soul, not a single soul, meaning since then, nobody. And he said, I said, Tuesday, not a soul, not a single soul, meaning that all the people who watch the Benny Hill show and are deliciously naughty, in his terms, have lost their souls. Another fascinating thing is that people who write me and people who are not aggressive say, oh, it's the funniest thing ever, and I love it when you chase the girls at the end of the show. And I never ever chase anybody at all. If anybody watches the show, I'm always chased. don't mean STE, I mean I was SED. But I'm everything. I never ever chase anybody, because it wouldn't be funny if I'm chasing them. The end of the show is I cause, I don't know, somebody's suit to go over them, or a building to collapse, or something to go wrong, and then I run and we play the music, and there's me running at the end, and everybody's chasing me. And what upsets them is, for example, you know, if they are nurses, they see me chasing nurses when it's nurses chasing me. And it is quite bizarre how, and even a man who wrote to me the other day, he runs some society which is the anti-censorship society, whatever it is, you know. I don't see anything wrong with you chasing these girls. He's on my side and he still sees me chasing the girl. And I get letters from America saying, you know, you lucky bugger chasing all those girls. But I never ever chase anybody. I've done about 71-hour shows, and in all of them, only once I chased some police women, but they were chasing me. And then I chased them afterwards, so that's fair, you know. But I don't. The whole idea is that I am the one who's running away. But they still see, if they saw a policeman chasing a burglar, they say, why is the burglar chasing the policeman? It is bizarre, that. It really is. But I can assure you, in fact, for a bet, I almost was going to say, well, we'll get a newspaper interested, and we will run them. And the man can come and watch and say, oh, yes, you are being chased. And I never chase.
By Jove! Ha, ha, ha! How tattyfalarious, folks. How discombobulating to listen to that wonderful programme full of rumbunky nonsensiness. John Hannam meets... Good gracious me.
You've got some exciting plans, haven't you, beyond, because you're finished with Thames now and you're going to...
Yes.
There's going to be some great shows all over the world, isn't there?
Oh, please, God, yes. What we're hoping to do is to do some co-productions around the world. The first one's set for America, and we've got some other ones lined up in other places around the world. The show goes to about 80 or 90 countries. I mean, I picked up the Sunday Times the other day, and it just said the Benny Hill show is very popular in Syria. I know it's in the Lebanon, it's in Nicaragua. They say they stopped fighting, you know, to watch it. So it is in some bizarre places. It has been on in Russia. It's still on in mainland China. I don't know where it is, but one of the girls phoned me up the other day and said she got a check from Japan. So it's on from there, because we get what's known as residuals.
Who makes you laugh, Benny, when you want a good
night? A lot of people make me laugh. The funniest comedy shows on television have got to be It'll Be All Right on the Night. That is genuine accidental comedy, and I can watch that over and over again and always laugh. Make myself sick with laughter. The man who's waiting for a hiccup. He's announcing, can we go again? And he gets almost to the end of his speech, and he has to start over again. Those sort of things, the genuine things that go wrong. And you can't recreate that. I used to do things called boo-boos where things go wrong. You know, there's a girl singing in front of a dressing table. She's singing a song about being alone. And you accidentally, a man miles away doesn't know what's going on. He's changing his trousers, you know. Another actor. But I always loved Eric, very much indeed. Eric Morecambe, Tom
yes.
Cooper. W.C. Fields films I love. I remember seeing one in Paris, and I saw it two nights running. And both films was called The Bank Dick. And both times I came out into the foyer, you know, not for a smoke, but my stomach aches so much.
You made some good films yourself, didn't you?
No, well...
Well, I made two or three big ones.
Yes, the first film I ever did was called Who Done It, in which I starred, 1955. And then... I think the next one was Light Up the Sky with Ian Carmichael and Tommy Steele, 1960. And then I did Magnificent Men of the Flying Machines.
Titty Titty Bang Bang, was it?
Yes, and The Italian Job.
Yeah.
I did a half-hour film for Paramount, which I wrote myself, called The Waiters, which was just a little half-hour film. But it sends a little money in every year, a little bit. It's on in somewhere around the world, it's on.
What's the big wish left for Benny Hill? You've conquered virtually everything. What would you like to do you haven't done, really?
Not a lot. There isn't a great deal. No, what I probably will do as I get a little older. What would I like?
You don't look it anyway.
What would I like to do? I'd like to go on an 18 to 30 holiday as one of them and not as myself. Yes, that would be nice. But given that one is as one is, I'd like to lose a bit of weight, which I don't do eating those things, do I?
You don't.
I try, but it goes back on, I'm afraid. I will try, because I do see myself sometimes, see the stomach and the chin and go, oh, don't stand sideways.
You're a happy man, though, aren't you?
Oh, people, generally speaking.
People say, you know, I've read press reviews to say you're not, but you're a very happy man, aren't you, really?
Yes, I don't laughing all the time, you know, but it's...
You enjoy life, don't you?
Generally speaking, yes. I was talking to a very nice gentleman not so long ago, the gentleman who, about 10 years ago, I had a kidney taken away, and he's still got it in his office. No, yeah. And we were just discussing things, you know, that he's a grandfather, and I think, you know, happily married, and we were discussing. I said, you know, I can understand how it's jolly nice. You know, when you come back to somebody. But you can't fly to Tokyo tomorrow. You can't go to Paris tomorrow. You can't go to New York. You've got to sort of, oh, you can't go this week because my mother's coming. I don't have that. But I come back to an empty flat. So it's as broad as it's long, isn't it? I had a newspaper man who was quite famous, so I won't mention his name, many moons ago. And just for a laugh, I put, because often if you go to the Hilton or the Royal Roof Restaurant, the Royal Garden, or anyway, you know, someone takes a picture, you know. And the house photographer does. And
yes.
Usually, you know, as you've seen eating in their hotel, they give you a couple of copies. And I've got these in folders of me, usually with a nice lady, taken in different restaurants, you know. And there's quite a few of them lying around. So I thought, before this man came, just for a laugh, I'll stick them up all over, you know. And he came in and looked around. And he said, I don't envy you, you know. I don't envy you. I don't envy you. I know, I really, I don't. Honestly, you know, I don't envy you. I said, well, you convinced me. Now convince yourself and we get on with the interview. But he said it about seven times, you know. I don't envy. I'm not envious. I'm not envious. Yes.
I mean, you haven't got the big star image. You don't drive a fast car and you go on walks. And I mean, that's deliberate, isn't it, really?
I've been looking for a house up in town, but instead of really settling down to it and looking for a house, I think, oh, no, I'll go to Paris for a fortnight or to Madrid or something. Where the house, I mean, in Southampton, should have new furniture. You've got to go and look at beds, and then they don't, and you've got to be there when they turn up, and you've got to, and I'm inclined to be a bit status quo-ish. Oh, leave, it's good enough, you know. Yeah, it's a bit silly in a way, isn't it, really? I suppose to my accountant's always saying to me, I can't save you tax if you don't spend anything. But I don't spend anything. I really don't. No, it's some strange newspaper suddenly decided, you know, because he does his own shopping, that makes him mean. Well, the thing is, you know, in answer to that, one could say, I think, that I don't spend as much money on myself as Rupert Murdoch does or Robert Maxwell, but I spend more money on myself than Mother Teresa does. So am I on the side of the angels or the devils? Because they're not so... If they say he's mean, you say, hang on, he doesn't spend it on himself. Does he spend it on anybody else, or does he give it away or anything? Oh, we don't know. Oh, he's very mean because he gives it all away. Well, that can't be right. They are just bizarre. Normally, I simply don't talk to the national press at all, any of them, because it's just stupid. I mean... I pick up the Sun, and because I go and stay with Sue Upton and her family in Hornchurch, it's sort of, oh, he's so mean, he spends his holidays in Hornchurch. Well, you know, every year I go to Paris a couple of times, I go to Madrid, I go to Barcelona, Marseille, the Nice, Cannes, you know. Sometimes I go to New York, if I go to Australia, I stop off at Hong Kong and Bangkok and Tokyo and Singapore and Manila, and then bum it around Sydney, you know. Somebody else is paying, so I stay at the best hotel. No. But Benny's now splashed out. Last year he went for the first time to the south of France, you know, 28th time, I suppose, and has bought a villa. They wanted a 100,000 for it, but tight-fisted Benny beat them down to 70,000. He's down there at present. Is he? Oh, good, you know. The thing is that people I know, the agents, say, I hear you've got a house down there, and I haven't. And they said, you know, one of them said, I'm thinking of buying one myself. Have you got any pictures of yours? And I said, I haven't got one. And I picked up another paper, it was a Spanish paper, it's true. It said, I've got a villa next to Sean Connery's in Marbella. But they won't show me where it is. But it becomes just total nonsense. It's just so bloody silly to say, oh, the Sun printed my shopping list, everything I bought, and how much it cost. Yeah, I know, but it wasn't what I bought at all. They don't even bother to find out. They just make it up. They don't ask, say, do you have all your meals at Kentucky Fried Chicken? They said, he has all his meals, you know. Let's say, what should we say? Should he get 50,000 a year? Oh, no, I don't know. 500,000 a year? Say 3 million a year. Yeah, go on, say. So they just say anything that comes into their head, you know, which I think is very sad, because you then read a report on a war that's taking place, but is there a war? Because if that's all lies on one page, could be all lies on the other. And that's what I disapprove of mostly.
Benny, thanks for talking to me.
All right, pleasure.
One of the great pros. It's lovely to meet you and wish your career continued success.
Yes, thank you very much.
Hi, Chill Blades. It's Nick Frisby here saying John Hannum is a puppet.
How dare you, Mr. Connolly? A puppet, indeed. Grateful thanks there to Benny Hill for a surprise interview right back in 1989 at the Lincoln Hotel on Shanklin Seafront on the Isle of Wight. Didn't expect to get it, but there we are. I got it. A couple of days later, I phoned the Southampton Evening Echo because at that time, Benny was living in Southampton. And I said to them, I've got an interview with Benny Hill. Would you be interested in me writing a feature for you? They said, oh, yes, please. He won't talk to us. So not only did I have the interview for the Isle of Wight Weekly Post, but also I got it for the Southampton Evening Echo. And later, of course, it was played on Isle of Wight Radio. Thank you so much for listening to another John Hannum Eats Archive. And don't forget to go to my website, johnhannum.com, with news of other interviews and how you might purchase my books online. And one does include a certain Benny Hill.
Well, that was super smashing great, wasn't it? Jim Bourne here, just reminding you, you've been listening to John Hannum.